Everyone, welcome to episode 18 of season 4 of The Bad Apples. My name is Klaatu, and in a sense, this is going to be Slackware episode 3, sort of. It's not supposed to have been a Slackware episode, but it turned into one. So, let's get started. By the time you listen to this episode, the last two episodes will have been about Slackware, and I guess that means this is going to be the third one, although this one's a little bit different, because this is a lot of feedback from listeners about the first episode of the Slackware Part 1 episode. I'm recording this before I've actually released the second part, so there might be more listener feedback to come, I don't know, but this is what I've got for you so far. So first of all, the first one to reply was Ron, who typically emails me just random Linux news stories, and this time just decided to up and send me a whole bunch of a really cool tip about this really cool shell script that he knows about, and by extension, a really cool site that I just found out about. I might have known about this site before, but I never really looked around it. But Ron says, Klaatu, you might want to use mirror-slackware-current.sh. It uses rsync to mirror the Slackware current, and it is from Eric Hamlier's index, which is slackware.com/alien/tools. So this people know Eric Hamlier's as Alien Bob. He's got a lot of tools, and I knew that. I didn't know exactly how many tools he has or how cool they were, but now I do. So the idea is that this shell script, mirror-slackware-current.sh, will go out and it will rsync a directory of your choosing, so you might want to do like /home/klaatu/slackware or /bin/slackware or whatever, and then make some kind of directory tree to mirror the mirror, which would be like /home/ftp/pub/linux/slackware/slackware-current/isos, for instance. The point is that you're going to download this script, and if you run it, it looks at the master rsync site, and if the change log has been altered, then it downloads the changes, and it makes a set of CD-ROM ISOs, or I think it can also do one DVD ISO. Either way, it creates a set of ISOs from current, obviously, from Slackware current, which is a really neat idea, because in that way you get an installable version of whatever is in Slackware current. So that's really cool. I mean, whether you just want to run it in Qemu or something or Qemu to test out the latest and greatest versions of Slackware, or whether you need it to go install on a different machine or something, who knows? But it's there. You know, this is a shell script that goes and gets the latest stuff and then burns it to, creates an ISO from it. So that's really cool. And then if you go to the slackware.com/alien/tools, you will find a whole host of shell scripts that he's done dating back, I guess, to 2006 or 2007, and just random stuff. I mean, there's CD backup, burn ISO, MD5 check, also volume defaults, QEMU_slackware. I don't really know what that is, but sounds neat. Rsync current, SBO, GPG sign, just Slack boot, just all kinds of different tools. I'm still forgetting the one that, oh, I know what it was, makeinitrd_command_generator.sh. So that sounds interesting. So I haven't really played around with all this stuff yet, because I don't really have a test system to just go around running random shell scripts on at the moment. But it is neat. It's a cool site to know about, so check that out. Frank Bell also emailed me. Frank, he's a big Slackware fan and user and everything, and he said that he learned stuff that he didn't know, even though he uses it all the time. One of the things was the thing about the Slack package mirrors, and he'd always, I guess, downloaded packages and then installed them with package tool, and so now he knows about the Slack package mirrors, which is cool, and leads me quite nicely and smoothly into the next email that I got from a guy named Bert. And Bert is clearly familiar with Slackware stuff, and he teaches me a couple of things, so I will share with you right now what he has taught me. So he says, first of all, when you're dealing with the startup scripts, which are, of course, in the /etc/rc.d directory, these are the scripts that are occurring during boot up. You know, these are the different things. There's like rc.inet, rc.s.im, just different little RC things. So there's an rc.modules that load, you know, tells you what modules it's going to load into the kernel while it's booting, stuff like that. So the approved Slackware method of either disabling a service or a daemon is to simply remove the executable bit associated with that startup script. The minute I read that, I thought, wow, how completely simple and obvious and just beautiful that is. Because, I mean, that's the thing about Unix. It's just so simple, you know? I mean, all you have to do, and I never thought of that, all you have to do is chmod minus x rc dot, I don't know, gpm or whatever that thing is called that I'm always disabling because I always forget to not enable it during install. So yeah, that's cool. I mean, I'd always just kind of moved it out of the folder because that's kind of what I figured was a good idea to do. So that's really neat. You don't have to edit it that way. You don't have to move it. So it's easy. It's really cool. And he says that this is relatively unique to Slackware, and that is what people are talking about when they say that Slackware has a quote-unquote BSD-style init system. Good to know. He also mentions the thing where I was talking about editing the .x initrc file to create your window manager. He points out that there's an xwm config script that does this on Slackware, and he is correct, there is that. I knew about that. I don't bother ever running it. The other way to do it that I actually do, you simply cat from /etc/x11/init are xinitrc / xinitrc dot whatever. So it's KDE or xinit dot xfce, xinit dot fluxbox, whatever, kind of, you know, whichever one of the ones that you want. So you cat the contents of that into your home directory as the dot xinitrc file, and that gives you a really nice starting place for a startx script, or a startx, like what happens when you say startx. So that's the other, I guess, that's a Slackware-approved method. I got that out of a book. I think that's what XWM config does for you, whether you're supposed to use one and not the other or whatever. I'm not really positive. I have a feeling that Bert is telling me the current approved method of doing it, XWM config. Another neat thing that he points out that I guess I kind of knew, but I never really thought about it this way. But he's saying that all the post-installation scripts from the installer that you run on Slackware will still be available on your Slackware system. You know, even after you've installed it and everything, there's still, you know, Lilo config. You can still run that. You can say, okay, I want to reinstall Lilo for some reason, so you can run Lilo config. Or maybe you want to change all your network settings. You know, maybe you have to actually enter some things into your ISP so that you can sign in. So, you know, maybe you have a login name or something to get onto your ISP's network. So you can run netconfig again. So there are lots of different little scripts that you come across when you're installing Slackware, but even after you've installed it and everything, they're still there, so that's kind of nice. He also tells me about a cool little hack for mPlayer. If you'll recall on episode, 409, I was talking about all the command line applications that you can use to kind of live in the command line for a while, and I guess on somewhere I had posted that mPlayer works great, but you have to have X. Well, interestingly enough, there is a way to play stuff in mPlayer without X actually being turned on or present, I guess. You have to run in a console that has the frame buffer enabled, which should just, you know, be your default Slackware installer, or I think most modern high-tech Linux distributions are going to have that. But you can simply say mPlayer -vo fbdev, that is fb as in frame buffer, dev, space, foobar.ogv, for instance. So you've just done a in player, and then you've done the option dash VO, as in video out, and then FB dev, frame buffer dev, and then whatever movie you want to play. That will simply start playing the movie in your console, in your text console. I guess the performance is going to vary greatly upon your hardware. There are some other options, I guess, for you to be able to center it and scale it up to full screen and stuff, but he didn't have all that off the top of his head. But that's a really cool tip, and I did not know about that. Didn't know about that at all. So it's really neat. I just didn't even realize such things were possible. It's very, very cool. Multimedia distributions. Multimedia distributions are really, really cool, and they're great ideas and they're great projects. You've probably heard of some of them: Ubuntu Studio, Studio 64, Transmission, Startcom, Dynabolic. These are the big ones that I'm aware of, and they're really cool. I'm especially partial to Dynabolic. I've always felt that that was a really neat project, and it was inspiring. Dynabolic is a very inspiring project, I think. But I'm afraid that most multimedia distributions are kind of, in one way, doomed from the very start. And that is because one of the strengths of Linux is that you have so much choice, so much opportunity to customize things. You can take things and change it and modify it and tweak it until you have exactly what you want. So if you show up at someone's doorstep with a quote, unquote, multimedia distribution and say, okay, here is your multimedia environment, enjoy, you're probably, I mean, you can count on that, on the fact that that's not going to be exactly what they need. And this is true with anything in multimedia, you know, whether it's even Linux or not. It's just multimedia tool sets are very specific to someone's own preferences and sort of their background and things like that. A lot of times the tools that people use aren't necessarily the right tools for the job. They just might be the tools that that person happens to have learned. I've seen people do, for instance, extensive word processing in a page layout program, and it's not really designed for that. It's designed for page layout, but because they are professional graphic designers and they know how to open up Quark Express or InDesign or something like that, and they know how to get a text box, and they know how to link the text box to span a multiple number of pages, and I show them something like Abbey Word, where it's just a very, very simple office program, and they're just amazed. You know, to them, they figured office program had to be, well, I guess I shouldn't even call Abbey Word an office program. It's a word processor. You know, in their mind, word processor equaled Microsoft Office. Something very overblown and bloated and convoluted. And then they'll see something really simple, and they'll go crazy because it's just so easy and it does exactly what they want and they don't have to fire up their page layout program to just do a simple text document. So my point is, and that was anecdotal, but my point, real point is that, yeah, some people don't use the right tool for the job, but they use the tool that they know best. So if you've got a multimedia distribution and you've included, you know, in your mind, the best and most stable sound editor in Linux, that doesn't necessarily mean that the person using it or destined to use your distribution really wants to use that best and most stable audio application. It could be quite possible that they're more familiar with, I don't know, some other format of doing things, and that's what they want to use for their audio editing. And so you're just, you know, you can't win, and you shouldn't win. And multimedia distributions are great for a couple of different things, and they're good for showing people what can be done in terms of multimedia on Linux. It's a great place to test out applications and see what you like and see what you don't like and all that, but in terms of it being a one-stop solution for for when you go to set up your multimedia studio, it's probably not going to be that. And I don't know that anyone should ever claim to be that or try to be that, because it's just not going to happen. And that's the point again of Linux, is that you can actually take it and modify it and change it and really customize it for yourself. So, to that end, I was sitting around kind of imagining what such a distribution, or I guess what such a thing might look like, I mean, in terms of taking Linux and molding it and modifying it and changing it and sculpting it into something that a multimedia person might need and want. First, I thought, well, you could just take a multimedia distribution and throw out the stuff that you don't need and include the stuff that you do need. And this is what I kind of used to do way, way back early when I was really looking at these multimedia distributions, mainly because I didn't know what was out there in terms of multimedia. So again, these were kind of helpful in that in the sense of not knowing what I had to choose from and really getting a good idea from these multimedia distributions. That was very helpful. But at some point along the way, you kind of figure out, okay, I really hate this program. I'm never going to use it. Let me get rid of it. And then you discover some other program that you do like, and so you add that in. And at some point, you're doing this so much that you start to question why you even started out with a multimedia distribution. You know, you just think, okay, well, maybe I should just get a base install of Linux and just throw the couple of applications on there that I actually am going to use. And it's quite true. I mean, that is a good idea, probably, because a lot of that stuff is not really any more integrated or any better configured than what you'll be able to do configuring it yourself, and it's going to take you longer to uninstall the stuff that you don't want and install the stuff that you do want than really makes it worthwhile at all. And you might not, and again, you know, I mean, this includes everything from, you know, which Office app was included, because if you're going to be living in this distribution anyway, you might as well have a good Office app in there or a good mail client or whatever, and what desktop environment is installed or what desktop environments are installed, because a lot of times on my so-called multimedia computer, I actually, you know, I still use it for non-multimedia stuff, and so I might want to have a separate desktop manager or a desktop environment, you know, for a different user, and so on. So it gets pretty complex if you're going to try to start from a multimedia distribution, and chances are the maintainers of that distribution haven't made the exact same choices as you would. Another issue, of course, is the actual software that's been included in the way that they are packaged. You know, I mean, there are a lot of distributions out there. They do different things. They do things differently. And sometimes they're going to compile some software package that you're going to use every day, and they're not going to include such and such an option during the compile of that software. It might be something that you won't even notice until the worst possible moment, and then suddenly something's not working. And of course, it won't be so apparent as, oh, FFmpeg wasn't compiled with H.264 support or X.264 support. It's going to be that such and such a video file just won't import for some reason into such and such a program. And you're not going to know why, you're not going to understand why, you're going to bang your head against the wall, you're going to try to figure it out, you're going to go get the video file again thinking that the video file is corrupt, and then you're going to reinstall the actual application that you're trying to import it into. And finally, in the end, you're going to figure out, oh, it's probably the back end of this whole thing, FFmpeg. And then finally, you're going to think to go investigate that, and you're going to find out, yep, should be sure, that wasn't compiled with whatever kind of support that you needed, and so then you're going to have to go and uninstall FFmpeg, and then you're going to have to reinstall FFmpeg with all the different options that you needed in the first place. I mean, that's kind of an example that I'm just kind of making up. I mean, but the point being that a lot of times when something goes wrong and you don't know what went into the creation of your system, the troubleshooting process is a lot longer. Because, I mean, obviously, if you'd compiled, for instance, FFmpeg or SOX yourself, and you knew that you hadn't included some obscure codec support because you just never thought you'd ever need that codec, and now something isn't working, and it might click a lot sooner that, oh, I know why that's not working. It's because SOX doesn't know what to do with this kind of codec or whatever. So this is a significant thing as well. So I started kind of imagining what it might be like if they took lessons, I guess, from three or four different projects that I've always admired. One project being Slax. Now, Slax, if you've ever used it, or if you've never used it, rather, Slax is a cool little, well, you've probably heard of it. I mean, it's a Slackware-based live Linux distribution. But the interesting thing that they did, and I did a Hacker Public Radio episode on this, so I'll kind of just briefly mention it, but the interesting thing that they do is they have these little Slax modules. I forget what they call them. I think they just call them Slax modules. And they're kind of little plug-in modules, and if you want, for instance, Firefox in your Slax environment, you simply download the Firefox module and you drop it into this directory on your Slax USB stick or CD-ROM. And when Slax boots up, when it starts up, it looks in this directory to see what kind of you know, little extra modules you've installed in there, and it kind of incorporates that into its system. It's pretty cool. This kind of modular approach to things is obviously very Unix-like, and that appeals to me greatly. I love that about Unix. It's one of the smartest things, you know, about Unix, I think. I mean, it's just the fact that it is modular and that you can string things together, all that other good stuff. So it's really cool. And it's something that I do admire, and I thought was really cool about Slacks. So something that, you know, a multimedia distribution, for instance, that you could take and kind of plug modules into for the different kinds of art that you want to create. So if you know that you are first and foremost a graphic designer, then you have this kind of graphic design module where you've got, you know, GIMP and Inkscape and Scribus and the GIMP effects and the brushes and the fonts and all these different things that you kind of concentrate your multimedia environment onto. And that's not to say that you're not going to have random audio editor here or a hobbyist video editing thing there, but you will have more of the graphic design stuff. Or, for instance, if you're an audio person, then you've got this audio module where you've got this set of audio applications, and you've kind of got them plugged into your distribution. You know, you've got all these different audio tools. You've got all the little line command things. You've got all the big audio editors, all the waveform editors, you know, just everything, the soft synths, the synth pads, the banks, the samples, you know, just everything you can think of that would go toward audio, and so on and so forth. So that modular approach seems very smart to me, especially, well, I mean, in general, but it's nice for a multimedia distribution, because that way you would be able to get this mythical multimedia distribution and kind of choose the concentration, you know, say, okay, I want all these apps, and then I'll install these other ones just kind of because I need them. Another project that got me thinking was Gentoo or Dragonfly BSD or those kinds of source-based distributions, I guess, where the user really knows exactly what's going into their system because they're building it themselves. You know, even something like Slackware, where you've got the menu-based installer, especially the when you're actually installing all the packages rather than just saying do a full install, actually going through one of the menus and looking at what's being installed and kind of excluding some of the ones that you just know you're not going to use. Or maybe not excluding anything, but at least you've seen what's going into the system. That kind of feel of sort of the user actually knowing what their OS is all about, what their OS is actually doing, I think that's pretty important as well. So this way you get, you know, you're not just taking something that someone dropped into your lap and just kind of figuring out, not really ever knowing what was put on the system and with what options and things like that. I think that the source-based stuff is really powerful for its for involving the user in everything that it does, and in everything that are actually going into the system that you're using, and for the actual options included in the applications. Again, those back-end kinds of applications, FFmpeg or SOX or just whatever, I mean, if you don't enable certain flags during configure, /configure, you're not going to have certain kinds of support. Or if you haven't compiled, you know, some application like transcode, for instance, with you know, FFmpeg in the back already, you know, there and all the libraries, you know, being compiled against, then you're going to have a different kind of functioning application. And you need to know this, I think, if you're going to really use your distribution to its fullest potential. Yet another project that interested me, of course, was Linux from Scratch. And Linux from Scratch is a neat project because it's a distribution without being a distribution. I mean, it's always listed on, for instance, DistroWatch, or it's listed as a distribution. But if you go to Linux from Scratch, of course, you're going to find a book, you know, a big text file or PDF, however you choose to get it, and it's going to tell you how to build your little distribution from scratch. But there's not really anything to download per se. I mean, actually there is. They have like a sort of a build environment, if I recall correctly, that you can download. But if you are running quote unquote the distro Linux from scratch, then you're running something that you have built from a series of text files that you've read and understood and comprehended and done. And it's not a distribution with an ISO or anything like that. So that's a neat way of doing things as well. So the realization of this fantasy, of this mythical multimedia distribution is or shall be something called Slacker Media. Slacker Media you can find at www.slackermedia.info. That's going to be probably for a year. It was 89 cents to get that domain. After that, it's just going to be straightedgelinux.com/slackermedia because that's where slackermedia.info actually points to. But anyway, the point being that Slacker Media is slackbook.org style, a book, a free book in HTML and text and PDF format probably. And it's going to, or it is rather, a series of tutorials, tips, little snippets of advice on how to build up a multimedia environment based on a basic Slackware install. And, of course, even the term basic Slackware install is highly subjective. I mean, what does that mean? You did or you did not install KDE. You did or did not install KOffice and a whole bunch of the other user kinds of applications. You did or did not include the development group, the development package, or the Emacs package, you know, the whatever. Basically, just the way that I am building up my own system and have been building up my own multimedia system, because Slackware systems have been, for me for a very long time, my multimedia distribution, because that's the stuff that makes me my money. That's the stuff that I freelance with, or that I, right now, teaching in relation to multimedia kinds of activities. So for me, a very stable, serious multimedia distribution is very important. That's not to say I don't use my Fedora machines for multimedia related stuff at all, but if I'm going out on a job, or if I'm going to discuss something with someone like my Blender project that is still slow going, and I never said it wasn't going to be slow going, you know, the system that I take along with me is the Slackware one. Now, in the past, what I've done is had kind of a list, mostly in my mind, of the stuff that I'm going to install on top of Slackware in order to make my little multimedia environment. And this has gotten more and more complex as time has gone on, as my needs have grown, as I've found out about new and different applications, as I have figured out more about, you know, compiling stuff on my own, things like that. So it started to get pretty complex, and at some point I started writing it down, and then once SBO PKG came out, I started literally saving the Q file. So that at some point, all I had to do after an install of Slackware was grab the SBO PKG Q file, load it into SBO PKG, and click install, or hit install, or process rather, and it would process the entire Q file. This was really handy. I mean, that alone has just kind of made some of my Slackware installs a lot faster. I mean, because all that I have to do is install Slackware, create my users, and then install SBO PKG, and then process that queue. And it runs through, and I walk away from it, and it's installing all kinds of software. It's kind of like if I just installed, I don't know, Fedora or you know, name your distribution of choice from the ISO, and then you do, like, you know, after you install it, of course, there's a billion updates, because by the time you downloaded the ISO, it's already, you know, a month old, so there's all kinds of new updates and stuff like that. So that's essentially what it's a lot like, is just kind of installing your distribution and then running all the updates. So I'm installing the distribution and then grabbing all the extra packages that I need for my everyday work. That's a big part of it right there. And then there's the stuff that I just absolutely have to install from source, because no one does it the way I want it to be done. And the modularity idea, of course, is embodied in the ability to go through the different SBO PKG packages and choose which group of extra packages you need to install in order to get an environment best suited for such and such a discipline, whether it's the graphic design stuff or the audio or the video or whatever. There will be different sections dedicated to each discipline. Right now I've got an audio, a graphic design, and a video, and you know, because a lot of these are kind of back indie kinds of things, like libraries and install scripts and things like that, or install, I guess, I don't know what they're called, scons and jam and things like that, there's some crossover, you know, there's some things that are going to be required no matter which module you do. So I'm trying to divide them up in a little bit into, okay, so if you want a multimedia distro, you're going to need these packages no matter what. And then if you want something geared toward graphic design, take a look at this set. If you want something geared toward audio, take a look at this set, and so on and so forth. Now, there are also some, there should be some downloads that I'll be pointing to, you know, things like GIMP brushes, brush sets, free fonts, free sounds, free samples, whatever, all that kind of stuff. None of this will be obviously set in stone, because the idea is that people should be able to customize it as they see fit. So the idea, of course, is to just simply guide people along the process of making a multimedia environment for them to work in. Is this for everyone? Quite probably no. A lot of people are not going to be able to take Slackware and get it installed and get it up and running and get all the different back-end stuff installed and all the different applications installed. You know, I mean, there's a certain learning curve to this. And, yeah, there's a learning curve. There's a little bit of understanding that you have to have in order to sit there and realistically expect to be able to sit and compile all these different applications. I hope to solve a lot of this with my tutorials. I'm hoping that Slacker Media itself will be helpful enough to get someone who's a little bit familiar with Linux over the hurdle of, okay, I've kind of got Slackware installed, but now what? How do I get more stuff on there? How do I customize it? How do I make it my own? And how to compile it from source with all the different options. So this is not a distribution. It's a quote-unquote distro from text, that is to say, in a fancy way, that it's a tutorial, a set of tutorials. So far, I've gotten a couple of responses about this. One from Peter, who has written me before. He does multimedia on his Slackware box, so this is kind of cool. And he sent me a variety of tips on getting Rose Garden installed, which requires KDE 3 compatibility, so there's a little bit of work to do there, specifically getting QMake to look at the proper QMake or the proper libraries or something like that. I forget off the top of my head. But yeah, there are a couple of things that you have to do there. And he sent me some notes about some notation software applications that you can install if you have the need to actually do music notation and stuff like that. So that was a really cool set of tips. And other people have just sent me kind of generic tips here and there. So and Monster B himself came up with the logo for Slacker Media. He suggested the idea for that, and in the spirit of actually putting a little bit of work into this, I did do a Slack build for Lives, which has been officially accepted into slackbuilds.org. So if you go to install Lives, the Lives is a video editing system, that's what it stands for. If you go to install that on your Slackware system via Slack builds or SBOPKG, then you are installing my Slack build, and if it doesn't work, you can tell me about that, because it's my problem now. I've also done a Slack build for Handbrake, the command line version of it, and for FreeTalk, which has nothing to do really with multimedia, but it is the Jabber client that I use, and I've been using the Slack build for that, you know, for my different systems, so I figured I'd better submit that to Slack builds as well. And ideally, I'll be coming out with a Slack build for something like QTractor or something like that, although I'm not guaranteeing it. It's just Slack builds aren't hard, but they're also not easy either. So if you're looking for a solid multimedia distribution, you're looking for something that's completely customized, tailored to what you need and what you prefer to use, take a look at Slacker Media. Slackermedia.info. And certainly if you have any ideas or suggestions or problems, just let me know. About all the cool Slackware stuff I have to talk about this episode, so hopefully some of that was informative, hopefully other parts of it were interesting. So anyway, thanks for listening. You can always contact me at klaatu@hackerpublicradio.org or klaatu@linuxcranks.info. You can visit the website at thebadapples.info and check out www.slackermedia.info. Or if you're listening to this a year from now, when the 89 cents has been all used up and slackermedia.info goes away, it will be straightedgelinux.com/slackermedia. You can IM me at notklaatu@jabber.org. You can find me in IRC, usually in #LinuxCranks or a lot of Linux links, all those other kinds of Linuxy kinds of channels. My name on there is NotKlaatu. So thanks a lot for listening, and I will see you next time.